Welcome to Literary Speaking with Crystal Lee Quibell. Literary Speaking is the author's guide to writing and publishing, sharing tips and tricks for aspiring authors. Crystal Lee's expert guests will bring you the latest information on how to write and publish your book into being. Are you ready to tell your story? Here's your host.
Welcome to Literary Speaking. I'm your host, Crystal Lee Quibell, and today I'm talking with Katie Simpson-Smith. Katie is the author of We Have Raised All of You, The Story of Land and Sea, and her latest fiction novel, Free Men. Katie, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
No problem. So what inspired you to sort of write fiction and historical fiction?
I had been writing fiction since I was very little. But never quite took it seriously as a career option. And so I pursued history as kind of an alternative way to tell these kinds of stories that I was so fascinated by. So I went to get my PhD in history and worked for a while on a historical project. But the more I was working on that, the more I realized that the kinds of stuff I wanted to know, which was how people were thinking and feeling and how they fell in love, that kind of stuff wasn't easily available in the historical record, especially for people on the margins of American society. And so slowly my interest in history sort of morphed back into fiction via historical fiction.
Awesome. So once you had written your book, you have your first book, and then your second book was The Story of Land and Sea. How many agents did you query before you found the one you wanted to work with long term?
So I went into this process not really understanding how it worked. So when I started compiling a list of agents that I wanted to query, I really just looked at the authors that I most admired and tried to figure out who represented them. So I put together a first list of about 8 agents, and I sent my one-page query letter out to all of them, and then thought, you know, what have I done? I have, like, launched this thing into the void, and I may never hear back from anyone, and that's totally fine. But I was really lucky in that a week after I sent out my queries, one of the agents wrote back and said that he would love to read more of the manuscript. And after he read the manuscript, he said he would love to work with me.
So how long did you work on your book with your agent before you decided to move forward and submit it to publishing house editors for consideration?
So we worked on it together for about 3 weeks, so not too long. He had some wonderful suggestions about things that could be sort of punched up a little bit in terms of the narrative and ways to make the characters a little bit stronger. So we worked with it sort of mainly tweaks for about 3 weeks, and then he said it was ready to be sent out.
So once you had submitted The Story of Land and Sea to publishers, how long was it before you had heard back from them?
So this is really the crazy part. He submitted it on a Friday and was really good about saying to me, like, we're not expecting anything. Like, don't get your hopes up. It could be months before we hear back from anyone. But Monday morning, he had heard back from 10 of the editors that he had submitted to, and they all wanted to meet
with
me. And so he called me up and said, can you get on a plane to New York tonight? Yes, I can.
Yes, absolutely. So you fly out to New York, and is there sort of this like pre-meeting before the actual auction?
Yeah, and so he set up meetings with these 10 editors, and I, you know, marched around New York City with my little notebook and got to go into these grand publishing houses, you know, even like walking into the lobby of Random House is such an amazing experience with, you know, books all over the walls. I felt very intimidated and scared, and my agent had to keep reminding me that, you know, they're auditioning for you as much as you're auditioning for them. So we had meetings with all of them that lasted maybe about 45 minutes each, and they talked to me about what they liked about the book, and they talked to me about what kinds of revisions that they would suggest. So it's really a chance to get to hear about their vision for the book and to figure out whose vision most aligned with the version of the book that I wanted to publish.
Absolutely. So you really get to kind of, you get to know each editor individually and what their plan is for the book. Did you know right off the bat that there was, you know, ones that you were more leaning towards?
Yeah, and it's a really hard thing to quantify, but you just get a feeling from someone that that they're sort of sympathetic to the way that you write and the way that you imagine this sort of fictional universe. So I was able to, you know, and too, being intimidated, I was very nervous about, you know, wanting to make a good impression myself. But by the end of the week, I was a little bit less nervous and was able to say, these are all just ordinary people who love to read books. You know, they aren't scary monsters. And they really were all incredibly down to earth and kind and really, really smart. So I knew that no matter what happened, I was going to be in really good hands.
And it must be sort of surreal. I mean, you've worked so hard on this book and put it out,
yeah.
And you were kind of, you know, timid and worried that an agent wouldn't be interested. And here you have 10 different editors fighting for your book.
Yeah, and they're talking about this thing that you've written in isolation for a year, and you haven't showed it to anyone except your agent. And then there's these 10 strangers, brilliant strangers, who have all these ideas about it, and it's just, it's very humbling in the way that, you know, things that you were working on at home alone, that you were just making up, that they're suddenly taking seriously. It's really, really marvelous feeling.
Wow. Well, everyone, you're listening to Literary Speaking with Crystal Lee Quibel, and today we're talking with author Katie Simpson-Smith. When we come back, Katie will share with us how long it took to publish the book once she began working with her editor at HarperCollins, and we'll tell you how you can win a free copy of her latest book, Free Men. We'll be right back.
What does your vivid life look like? What does it feel like to be living a vivid life every single day? How do you start? What's the first step for you personally to make the shift that you've been seeking? Find out now. Vivid Life. It's a happier, healthier, wealthier state of being. Get there today by following us on Facebook, Twitter, or subscribing to our free inspirations in your inbox at vividlife.me.
Your story is begging to be told, but do you know where to start? Crystal Lee Quibel is dedicated to helping you achieve your book publishing dreams. Go to CrystalLeeQuibel.com. That's Crystal Lee Quibel, Quibell.com, and sign up for Crystal Lee's newsletter today.
You're listening to Vivid Life Radio Talk Radio that connects you to the most current, optimistic, and inspiring conversations on the planet. Get ready to be catapulted into your happiest, healthiest, and wealthiest life ever. Go to vividlife.me. That's vividlife.me for details on our previous and upcoming conversations with the world's brightest minds sharing their wisdom for happier, healthier, and wealthier lives.
Welcome back to Literary Speaking. I'm your host, Crystal Lee, and we're continuing our conversation today with author of We Have Raised All of You, The Story of Land and Sea, and Free Men, Katie Simpson-Smith. Katie, once you've met with the editors, what happens next?
So in an auction, there are two different kinds of auctions that can happen for books. One of them is called a round robin, where people submit their bids for a book and then continue to submit sort of better bids, and the people who are bidding less eventually sort of drop out. But that kind of auction can take place over several days or even weeks. And so my agent decided that he really wanted to sort of wrap everything up by the end of this week that I was meeting with people. So he did what's called a best bids auction. And that means that each editor has just one chance to place a bid, their best bid, and then whoever wins, wins. And so all this happened on Friday of that week. So the 10 editors placed their bids by, I think, 11 a.m. And then he informs the top three that they're the highest bidder, and they get a chance to raise their bids if they want. And then he told me I was not allowed to be in the room for any of this. So he told me to go wander the streets of New York City and entertain myself and don't think about it. I was like, sure, I just won't think about it at all. And then he said he would call me around noon to let me know what had happened. So I remember I was sitting at a picnic table in Bryant Park, trying to read a book and, you know, reading the same sentence over and over again with my phone sitting next to me. And then he called me and told me sort of who the highest bidders were. And then he reminded me that in an auction, you don't have to go with the highest bidder, that it's a way for publishers to sort of express their interest in you, but you're totally free to choose the editor who you felt most sort of aligned with creatively. And that was a relief, because I thought, oh gosh, you know, what if one of the editors that I didn't mesh as well with wins the auction, and then I'm sort of, you know, her property for the rest of my life, and it doesn't work like that at all. So that was a relief. So the fortunate thing was that the editor that I sort of most fallen in love with that week was the editor who ended up winning the auction. So we didn't have any hard decisions to make. It was just like, that's the editor that I totally want to be with. And that was Terry Carton at HarperCollins. So that was a very, very exciting phone call to get. And then later that afternoon, I met up with my agent and we talked about sort of the steps, next steps going forward. And I got to talk to Terry on the phone. And she was so sweet. She was in a meeting but said that she wished that she could take a train to wherever I was and give me a giant hug, which was so sweet.
Oh, that's so nice.
I know.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and it just sort of goes to show the sort of general kindness that exists in New York publishing that I just didn't expect. You know, I thought they would be bloodthirsty and competitive. And in fact, you know, they're just really nice people.
Well, and they're just as passionate about your work as you are, and that's the nice thing.
Yeah.
You're working with somebody who, you know, championed so hard for your book, and they came in as the highest bidder, and you had a great connection. So what was it like to, you know, shift gears and now work with, you know, your editor with HarperCollins?
Yeah, it was interesting because I had gotten used to sort of my agent's way of editing, and now I had a new person sort of reading the novel very closely. Which for the most part was just really exhilarating. Like I had shown it to so few people that to get that kind of close attention was really exciting for me. So she had some really good ideas about a few points in the novel that could be strengthened. And so we worked on edits for about a month, before she decided that it was ready. And then it gets shuffled into the production queue, which is a very, very long process. And I had no idea all the things that were entailed in publishing a book, you know, from designing the cover to coming up with a marketing plan to, you know, they're very eager to hear about your plans for social media. And my plans for social media were very minimal. but it's a very interesting process in which all of these people suddenly come on board the project in various different departments.
Well, and I think what was really interesting is, you know, Jane had sent me your book to review, and I started reading it and thought, I have to look this girl up. And when I looked, you had a website, but you aren't on social media. So how, you know, what are the benefits of that you find being a writer?
Yeah.
Did you make that choice to stay away?
It's definitely a trade-off. I think I had just, I'm one of those people that's always behind in terms of technology. Like I didn't get a cell phone until my first novel came out because my publicist was having conniption fits about being able to contact me. So it's sort of you have to realize who you are as a person and figure out how to best promote your book in a way that is true to that. And it turns out that who I was not, you know, I've never been on Facebook and so it wasn't as much of a conscious choice, but now that I'm more aware of how authors use social media for better and for worse, I can see sort of how it can be a really useful tool for networking and for sort of putting yourself out there, but that it's also can be very dangerous in terms of sort of sucking your time away and getting distracted by all the chatter of the internet. And You can also easily fall into this weird competitive space and you hear, you know, all the amazing things that other writers are doing that you know. And so I think it's just much easier for me to take a step back from all of that because it's easier to focus on the writing and to focus on what you yourself are doing. But again, I think it's a person-by-person decision. And I think there are a lot of benefits, obviously, to social media, but I'm pretty happy with staying out of it for now.
So when it came time to, you know, market of Land and Sea, and then, you know, in terms of Free Men as well, how did they handle the marketing aspect? Did they take care of a lot of it for you, or were there things that you set up for yourself as well?
Yeah, so what I did was the website, and I'm very lucky to have a brother who is extremely talented in everything computer related. So he and I worked together to sort of come up with a template that I could pretty easily change and add events to and things like that. And it was fun for me to work on the website because it's a way to sort of create your online presence in a more static way. Like, you're not expected to sort of constantly be adding, you know, blog updates or whatnot. So I could put it there and then I could just sit there and exist in the ether. And that was sort of more my speed. But the marketing team was really great at sort of filling in all the other gaps. And they were the ones who planned my book tours and who sent copies to, you know, magazines and newspapers to be reviewed. So I'm really lucky in that I wasn't expected to sort of take on a larger burden of that.
Well, and I think, too, I mean, you had a beautiful layout in Vogue magazine, and even with Free Men, you know, Tim McGraw was posting a picture of it and saying that he was reading it. So it's really interesting to see an author who did not have a social media platform come onto the scene with these amazingly successful and beautifully written books, and they're doing well. So, you know, I think it's great to hear stories like this where, you know, you don't have to be so involved in building a platform. You can certainly focus on writing the most beautiful work you can and putting it out there.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to look at it.
So, you know, how long was the process? I mean, you had Of Land and Sea was sort of the you know, debut in a sense. And how long did it take from the time that they began, you were done the editing after about a month. From then on, how long did it take from that process to be available for pre-order and available in bookstores?
So we sold the book the first week of October in 2013, and then worked on edits with my editor through sort of mid-November, and then the book came out the following August.
Wow.
So pretty long time, and it was surreal to sort of watch this thing take shape, you know, to get the cover and to learn about their ideas for the interior layout. And the thing that you've just been working on as a Word document on your computer suddenly becomes a physical object. And it's wild to watch that. You know, they send you the first galleys, and it's just like, wait, this is what I wrote. And it's like in this beautiful package now. and I think that kind of long lead up to a publication is a good way to sort of very slowly realize what's happening to you and to your life.
well,
so
it's
gives you
really,
time to process.
Yeah. Oh, really? It's really like a pregnancy, you know, like there's time to get ready for it, and then it's born,
and
there's the growing pain.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's so interesting because even Free Men, anybody who looks at the book, I mean, it's got this gorgeous greenery on the cover, and even the pages, like the way the pages are cut. And so it's not, you know, it just feels like old world, you know, old South. And I loved that about it too, with every little detail goes into it. And did you get a lot of input into that, or was it more they came to you with ideas and you just kind of went with it?
Yeah. So they give me choices at certain stages, and doing the cover is always fun. I think it's probably more frustrating for them, but it's really fun for me because I get to say, oh, can you tweak that? And can you like adjust this a little bit? They're like, sure, Katie. but like one of the things about the cover of Free Men that I suggested was that they pull some of those tree branches in front of the lettering on the title. I think that just makes it look so cool. Like you're looking back into the forest at this, you know, story that's about to take place. So I'm lucky that they did sort of take my input into consideration because I know that doesn't always happen.
Yeah, and I mean, it's really cool to see how it evolves from the very first book you've written to now. If you could go back and tell your early writer self something before you went into the book auction and before this all happened, what would you tell her? What advice would you give her?
I think I would tell myself to take myself more seriously as a writer. I had, you know, been writing stories since I was 6 years old, but always as a hobby, you know, never as something that I could see myself doing for the rest of my life. And I think that was only because I didn't have a lot of examples of successful writers who are making it as a career. And so I think I shortchanged myself in terms of my own dreams. Because a lot of dreams we have when we're younger are sort of more fantastical. Like, you want to be the prima ballerina or an astronaut. Mm-hmm. And it's good to remind yourself that those things are actually possible. Like, you can be a prima ballerina if you work really, really hard. And so I think by the time I got to this stage of publishing the book, I was just so overwhelmed that I didn't really enjoy it as much as I could have, because it was, the whole thing was just shocking that all of this was coming true. So I think if I had taken myself more seriously as a writer, I would have felt like, okay, this is, you know, what happens when you work really hard on something for most of your life. Like, you know, it's okay to sort of revel in this success.
Yeah, and really to celebrate each little milestone that you come across, and then the big milestones, it's like, you know, it's okay to celebrate it and pat yourself on the back and say you worked really hard and created something amazing. What would you say was the best advice you've ever received about writing?
I got some really good advice about publishing from one of my mentors when he said that once your book is published, it sort of is cut off from you and it belongs to the world now. Again, very much like childbirth. Like, this thing that has been a part of you is now something that will be judged by other people. And if you hold on to it too much, it can be really, really hard to sort of watch all of these various opinions, and because you want to say, no, that's not what I was intending with that passage, or, oh, you know, you're reading that character wrong. But what's beautiful about publishing a book is that it becomes the property of all of these readers, and all of their opinions are equally valid. You know, the way they read into a scene or the meanings that they take from a book are often totally independent from what you intended. But that's the beauty of fiction, you know, that we can find pieces in stories that are relevant to our own lives.
Well, and really getting a chance to see what other people think and the discussions that they have around the book, things that you never sort of thought of while you were writing the characters. Is there, you know, do you find it difficult to let go of the characters even when you've completed the book? You know, you say goodbye to everybody in a way.
Yeah, it's hard, and they do linger for a little bit. I know with the new book, there's various characters that people either strongly identify with or really don't care for as much. And as a writer, I sort of am deeply in love with all of them. And so when I hear someone say, you know, oh, such and such a character was, you know, clearly the villain, I say, no, like, he was a lovable person. But again, you know, that's another case where you just have to let it go and say that this is taking on its own life in the world, and that's a good thing.
Absolutely. What would be the one message you hope people will take away from your stories, especially from Free Men?
Oh, gosh. I think, Free Men is a lot about sort of the big dreams that people have and sort of how you go about pursuing them. And it's sort of reminiscent of my own life, in that I think we all have pretty big dreams, and some of them are submerged deep down in our hearts. But that there are moments in our life when we have an opportunity to really go after them. And those are the times when, you know, we have to sort of step up to the plate and see, like, am I going to be the kind of person who follows this wherever it may lead? I think my books get into that as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a great message, Katie. I want to thank you so much for being here today, and thank you for writing the most beautiful fiction I've certainly read. I really enjoyed it, and I hope everyone else will too when they pick up their own copy of Free Men and of Land and Sea.
Thank you so much. It was such a pleasure to talk to you.
Excellent. Well, everyone, Katie Simpson-Smith can be found online at www.katie.com. You can win a free copy of Free Men by visiting my website at crystalleequible.com and sign up for my newsletter. Winners will be notified weekly on our Facebook page, and make sure you tune in next week for more tips and tricks on how to write and publish your book. Thank you for listening, and please do keep writing.
Thank you for listening to Literary Speaking with your host, Crystal Lee Quibell. To start discovering how you can begin telling your story, go to crystalleequibell.com. That's Crystal Lee Quibell, Quibell.com. And sign up for Crystal Lee's newsletter. Join us again next week for more advice from your favorite authors and publishing professionals.
What does your vivid life look like? What does it feel like to be living a vivid life every single day? How do you start? What's the first step for you personally to make the shift that you've been seeking? Find out now. Vivid Life. It's a happier, healthier, wealthier state of being. Get there today by following us on Facebook, Twitter, or subscribing to our free inspirations in your inbox at vividlife.me.